So I'm doing an experiment. We are an experiment today, because usually I like to bring in something very short and let it fall into our meditation. And but this story of the lindworm has been hanging with me for a while. And so I've been feeling curious about what about that. So I'll say a couple of things, and then what I'd like to do is to fall into the meditation, and after a few minutes in the meditation, I will read the story, and it's a little bit long, and so it'll be story time, and we'll see where it goes. I've had that line from Bob Marley, you know, all I ever have for redemption songs floating up again. I think that's all I ever have right now. And this one is one. The story, I think, is a redemption song. And also I've been finding this theme of a kind of undercurrent of a theme about otherness keeping me company. How in a way otherness is required for a sense of belonging. And watching my daughter with her little baby girl, so happy in the sense of belonging to this little being. And also I was thinking about slinkies, the action of a slinky, the way that it opens and closes again as it goes tumbling down the stairs, and you know, other and not other, another and not other, which also reminded me of our wonderful con about calling out, and you know, in David Hinton's translation, Crag called empty one, Master Crag, auspicious mountain, magisterial teacher called out to himself every day, empty one. And he answered himself, exactly. Then he said, awake, always awake. Exactly. Through all the marvelous days of times to come, refuse the delusions of people. Exactly, exactly. And so there's this wonderful other and not other to that exchange. Also, so I was thinking about all the ways that we call out to ourselves as the other and to the other as ourselves, as myself. And as Woman's comment goes, he's buying himself and selling himself at once here, you know, playing this game with phantom faces and ghost masks, flocks of them. So that's been sort of around too for me, that sense of the slinky feeling of things, calling to one's own other and answering. And to that unformed question that's in there somewhere about belonging or even about being beloved, which seems to be such a yearning way deep in this time. And I think the dreams where we dream of long lost loved ones maybe have something to do with that. So what about the way that being beloved requires longing? Belonging requires longing. And that other, what other that I've forgotten about might be essential to the call to be someone Tavadra now. So throwing those things in as just what's the context in which I've found this story calling out. So I'll start us some meditation and have some quiet and then bring the story in. in a way, a story in meditation is like incense. It's an offering, and yet at the same time, it's just a smoke and a scent in the air of being here. It's this deliciously odd thing to be completely here. And have room in this here for a little smoke. Once upon a time, long ago and far away, lived a king and a queen in their marvelous kingdom, happy, content in most ways, except for the secret sorrow that weighed upon their hearts. They were unable to conceive a child. This sorrow deepened and deepened in them until one day the queen went wandering way into the forest where she could grieve alone, wailing and scratching herself on brambles and nearly lost. There, in the depths of the forest, she came upon a strange old woman who said, "Why are you grieving? What is this melancholic thing in your heart? You need to speak it. I'm sure I can help." So the queen told her of her trouble, and the old woman said, "No problem at all. Here's what you do. But you must do it exactly as I say. You must speak your desire into a two-eared drinking cup, and tonight at sunset in the northwest corner of the garden, put it bottom upwards in the dark soil. Tomorrow morning at sunrise, lift it up and you'll find two roses, one red, one white. You must choose one of these and only one, and you will conceive a child." No ill is without its remedy. The queen was filled with hope at these words, gave her most heartfelt thanks, and did exactly as the old woman had said. But when she tasted the white rose, it was utterly delicious. And the feeling of light entering her womb was so enthralling that before remembering, she gulped down the red one as well. Nine months later, her time came. The birthing room was prepared. The women were in attendance. And the midwife came and the queen labored and pushed. But what the midwife first saw coming from between her legs was a small black snake, a lindworm. In horror, she tossed it out the window into the forest and turned back to the queen, who was now pushing out a gorgeous, perfect baby boy. The midwife never mentioned that other bird, and the king and queen happily raised their son, the bright, healthy son they had dreamed of, who grew to be a handsome prince, and suddenly, it seemed, he was 20 years old, and it was time for him to find a bride. He saddled up and headed off to go out of their kingdom to find a bride in foreign lands. But he didn't get very far. Riding through the forest, he came to a crossroad that was totally blocked by a huge, fierce black snake who snarled at him, "Older brothers marry first, no bride for thee till there's a bride for me." The prince headed off by another route. Same thing. At the first crossroad, the huge black snake. "Older brothers marry first." Eventually, the prince had to return to the castle and report on these strange and awful events and ask his parents, "Is there something you've forgotten to tell me?" Deeply puzzled, they finally called for the midwife, who confessed what had happened, the small snake she had tossed away. The king and queen, frightened and amazed as they were, nonetheless rose to the occasion. "Go and find the lindworm," they ordered, "and bring him home. We must find him a wife." And this they set out to do. The king found a princess from a faraway kingdom who was brought to the castle and prepared for a wedding, only to find, when she saw the lindworm, that it was too late to escape. She was led to the marriage chamber, and that was the last that was seen of her. In the morning, when attendants opened the door, there was a pile of bones on the floor, and the lindworm looking very well fed. This awful scene was repeated two more times, and after that, there was no king who would send a daughter at all. So the king went to a shepherd nearby, first trying to persuade this father to offer his daughter, and when that failed, simply announcing that she was required to go. The daughter, terrified though she was, agreed. After the king left, she went tearing off into the forest, where she was very much at home, in utter despair, shredding her arms and legs on the brambles as she ran. And deep in the forest, as she paused under a great oak tree, a little, very old woman appeared out of the tree and asked, "What is your trouble? Tell me. And maybe I can put things right." "I very much doubt that," said the young woman. But she told the whole story. "I'm going to be devoured by this beast. Shouldn't I be in despair?" But the old woman said, "Not at all. This won't be any problem if you do exactly as I tell you. Before you go to be married, you must set these requirements. You must be given 10 white silken shifts, a tub full of lye, some very strong brushes, and a tub of fresh milk. These must be ready in your bedchamber. Then, when the lindworm tells you to shed a shift, you tell him he must first slough a scaly skin. And when all his skins are off, you must scrub him with the lye and then wash him in the fresh milk. And then you must take him and hold him in your arms, if it's only for one moment. Do just as I have said, and all will go well. And she disappeared back into the great oak tree. Awful as this thought was to the shepherd's daughter, she was wise and courageous. And she also saw that this was her best hope of living, so she did exactly as she'd been told. When the wedding day arrived, the bride was fetched in the royal chariot with six white horses and taken to the castle to be decked as a bride. Her requirements had been honored, even though everyone thought they were nonsense and that she would just be eaten like the others. She was led to the wedding hall, and when she saw the lindworm, she was indeed horrified. But he stood by her side, and she stood tall, and they were married. A great feast was held, and when it was over, the bride and bridegroom were led to their apartment with music and torches, quite a procession. As soon as the door was shut, the lindworm turned to his bride and demanded, "Fair maiden, shed a shift." The shepherd's daughter answered him, "Prince lindworm, slough a skin." There was a long silence. Then, "No one has ever asked me to do that," he said. "But I command you to do it now," she replied. He began to moan, to writhe, to struggle and scream until an entire scaly skin lay on the floor. The shepherd's daughter removed a shift and laid it on the skin. Right away, the lindworm repeated, "Fair maiden, shed your shift." And she replied, "Prince lindworm, slough a skin." And he did, with agony and a great deal of noise. And this went on until nine skins lay on the floor, covered by nine white shifts. And what remained of the lindworm was a huge, thick, gooey, white mass, awful to behold. But the young woman knew what to do. She scrubbed and scrubbed with the lye as he writhed and wailed until at last here was a man with a man's face, a face that had known long suffering, an ordinary man's face. She lifted his body into the milk bath and washed it, and then, utterly exhausted, and still somewhat afraid, she lifted it onto the bed. She had one more step to take, to hold him, if only for a moment. In the morning, the attendants cautiously cracked open the door, dreading to see what they had seen each time before. But instead, what they saw was a man and a woman sleeping together in radiant contentment.